Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go on a Friday, live in Los Angeles. It's the Herd. You can eat outdoors here now. It's something special. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, Fox Sports Radio, iHeartRadio, and FS1. Yes, it was chilly last night eating outdoor with my wife and friends, but it was eating outdoors nonetheless. It's just a new world. It's a new world here.
Chicken parm?
Darn right. A little linguine and chicken parm and an espresso. Joy Taylor is joining me. I'll have my Super Bowl pick in 1 hour from now. We got great people on the show today. Carson Palmer, Malcolm Jenkins, Joe Thomas, and Joy, of course. So I'm gonna start the show, Joy, today with a respect. Guys are funny about this. Maybe it's all that testosterone, but respect's a big deal for guys. I don't know if it is for women. Is it for women?
Oh, yes, very. Okay. At least for me.
All right. Well, you're very competitive.
Yes.
You're athletic and you're very professionally driven. Not to say you have some guy in you, but I'm saying is
no, respect is a big thing though.
Yeah.
It's very important.
For guys, it's crazy. You can be rich, you can own the world, and then you still have this little chip on your shoulder from like 20 years ago because you didn't get drafted where you should be drafted. Respect never goes away. If you got disrespected by somebody, it doesn't matter how big your bank account is, what your trophy case looks like, it's with you forever. There was a moment in that documentary, Tom versus Time. Remember that? I mean, it wasn't the MJ doc, but it was pretty darn good. And the moment in the doc that stuck with me more than any singular moment was not about Tom Brady. It was about Giselle, his wife. She's in the car. And they're interviewing her, and Tom allowed this to make it into the documentary because Tom had final editing approval, right? And Giselle says, you know, he just wants to feel, like, respected. You know, he just wants to feel appreciated. That does not go away. This is about Belichick for Brady. Let's think about Monday. If Mahomes wins, it's about so many things. It's about him becoming a top 10 quarterback of all time. It's about him going MVP, Super Bowl in 3 years. It's the risky business for Tom Cruise moment for Mahomes. It's, oh, Tom Cruise is great. Then he did risky business in the underwear, and it's like, oh, he's an icon. Mahomes goes from great to all-timer, top five. Elway, Marino, Montana, Brady, Manning, Mahomes. For Mahomes, this game is legacy-defining and brand-altering and discussion-changing. We'll never talk about quarterbacks the same. For Tom Brady, he wins. You know what we say Monday? He stuck it to Belichick. He really stuck it to Belichick. A Mahomes win does not discount anybody else's legacy. If Brady wins, even I'll think a little less of Bill. One team is playing for joy. One player is playing for revenge. When Giselle is allowed in that, and by the way, that's what you see. When the wife's saying that to the camera, what are the discussions like at home between Tom and Giselle? That was the filtered version without the blankety blank and blankety blank and blank that guy and blank this system. Mahomes is still trying to figure out where he's going to land in the big quarterback discussion. Tom's there. He's at the top. He's not going to go on top of the top goat. 25 years from now, Brady's six will still be discussed more than Brady's one in Tampa. This one, though, at the bar with your buddies, will be the one where, oh, man, God, he really stuck it to New England. To me, if Mahomes wins, if he wins, it's about a lot of people winning. It elevates Andy Reid's legacy, the Hunt family, Roger Goodell has a new face of the league and a dynasty. It's about Mahomes. It's about Travis Kelce. It's about this proud city. The next dynasty is smack dab in the middle of America. There's a lot of winners. If the Buccaneers win, it's about Tommy getting over on Belichick. There are so many topics if the Chiefs win. It's a much easier show for me. I could talk about Andy Reid for segments and Mahomes for segments and a dynasties all time. If Brady wins, I can tell you what the first segment is. Brady here, Belichick under him, system, give me a break. One's playing for joy, one's playing for revenge. But when I think of all the images of Tom, and I don't think this means there's anything less. I remember Deflategate, we found text, he was talking about Peyton Manning. It's how we operate as guys. We hold grudges, high school. We have bad dreams, nightmares. We age more quickly. We die sooner. We hold this stuff in. We don't communicate like women. Women go to the bathroom together to talk. Guys go to the bathroom. We don't even look at each other. Women have a race for the cure. We don't have a race for the prostate. Just who we are. We hold grudges. We're pettier. It's that respect thing. And when Giselle said he just wants to feel appreciated, what were the discussions at home like? Don't kid yourself. Bill's not rooting for Tom. And Tom is looking to get over on Bill. And I'm here for all of it. All right, where I saw the Hunt family is a great NFL family. And he was talking about Mahomes has a little Jordan feel to him. And he was saying, you know, it's amazing. Patrick had so much success early in his career. As great as Michael was, it took a few years before he won his first championship. He goes, Patrick is so far ahead of where we thought he would be. The difference, of course, is that not only was Michael Jordan great, but Rodman was the best rebounder in the game. Phil Jackson was the best coach in the game. Tony Kukoc was the best European in the game. Steve Kerr was the best shooter in the game. Scottie Pippen was the best Robin to a Batman in the game. It was easy to pick Michael Jordan. He was surrounded by so much. But let's think about this Kansas City team Sunday. Their defense, total defense, they're ranked 16th, right in the middle of the league. Their run game is ranked 16th, right in the middle of the league. Sacks, they're 19th. Offensive line this morning is the second best one in that game Sunday. If you are picking Kansas City, you're just picking the early Michael Jordan. You're picking Michael to just beat the Celtics, the Pistons, the Lakers. Tampa's got the better defensive line this morning. That's not arguable. Tampa's got the better offensive line this morning due to injuries. Tampa's got the better linebackers. Tampa's at home. Tampa currently has the better run game. They have the better pass rush. All of it, Tampa. Better roster, deeper roster. If you like Kansas City, then you are betting on Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid. And, oh, I get it. Because a year ago, San Francisco, in my opinion, had the better roster. And I liked Garoppolo, and I love Shanahan. And they still couldn't win. Because Kansas City scored 21 points in 5 minutes and 5 seconds. The most complete roster doesn't win Super Bowls. In fact, let's look at this year. If you ask me the most complete roster in the NFL, I would say the New Orleans Saints. Hell, they've got a third quarterback I like a little bit. That's the best roster in the league. Oh, they've been gone for weeks. I actually think the second best roster in the NFL, even with Jared Goff, was the Rams. They'll just draft the best player available. They don't have an absolute need, especially now they have Stafford. They don't have something they have to draft. Their secondary's great. Their D-line's great. Their O-line ranked third PFF. Their receivers are amazing. Tight end, running back, Cam Akers. Those teams are long gone. And the Buccaneers, in my opinion, probably have the third best roster in the National Football League. And it guarantees absolutely nothing. Now I can see them winning. It's called the 2007 Super Bowl, where the flashy Patriots, Randy Moss, Wes Welker and all those points came in, and the New York Giants defensive line just wore down even Dante Scarnecchia's Patriot offensive line. They just wore them down. And in the end, Giants made a big play and upset those unbeaten Patriots. There's no question that's possible. In fact, the wise guys, the sharps in Vegas, jumped on Tampa +3.5. That's the game they mostly envision. The early bettors is that D-line just doing a Giants on the Patriots and controlling the Kansas City Chiefs. But boy, it is hard to bet against Reed and Mahomes in special. In almost half their drives in the playoffs, almost half, the Chiefs have scored a touchdown. That doesn't make any sense. It's incredibly difficult to bet against special. I remember when the Miami Heat were great, and you had Bosch and LeBron and Wade, and they had no size. They had no size. Like Joel Anthony was a center. He was 6'8". They weren't very good at point guard. Point guards always matter in the finals. They had a new kid coach, Spoelstra. Their bench was hit and miss. At times, they were too old. LeBron and Wade didn't even perfectly fit together. Bosch's game got marginalized. Hey, Chris, 25 a game? Go out in the perimeter and shoot jumpers. But it was special. They'd go through these 6, 7, 8 minute spurts. And you're like, yeah, this is special. That's Kansas City. Hard to bet against. I'll give my pick in 50 minutes.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
So I'm reading Clark Hunt. He's the CEO and the Kansas City Chiefs chairman. And he's talking about how, you know, Mahomes is so much better, so much quicker than Jordan. And Jordan took time and time and time. I think one of the things about the NFL that is so unique, and I've always been a big fan of recruiting and the NFL draft. I have friends who have listened to me in Los Angeles 15 years ago, and they're like, you were so into the draft. Like, who cares about drafts? A friend of my own says that. And he goes, you were so into it. You made me into the draft. This is one of the things. This is why I love the draft and why I love football. In baseball, Bryce Harper, everybody knew he was going to be great at 16. We knew A-Rod was going to be great at 17. They were writing stories about him. In the NBA, LeBron and Kobe were turning heads at 15 and 16. Tiger, 13 years old. Serena and Venus, 12, 13. Connor McDavid hockey. In every other sport, there's no big surprises on the next star. In the NFL, you have no idea where they're coming from. Josh Allen went to a JUCO. Russell Wilson had to transfer. Brady backed up in college. Mahomes had a losing record at a losing program. Aaron Rodgers, nobody offered him a scholarship. He went to a junior college. You have no idea where the next, forget the player, the next star of the league comes from. Think about this. From 2000 to 2017, that's almost two decades, the number one high school football quarterback recruit, 17 years of the number one. One even starts in the NFL and he's never won a playoff game, Matt Stafford. One of 17 starts in the league. It doesn't work that way in basketball. It doesn't work that way in hockey. Connor McDavid was playing juniors in Canada. He was 15 years old and everybody was like, oh, he's the next Gretzky. Bryce Harper, A-Rod. You see it coming for miles. You have no idea. Think about this. The last three number one quarterbacks all transferred. Joe Burrow transferred. Baker Mayfield transferred. Kyler Murray transferred. First team's like, nah, you're not good enough. All right, go to the other place. It's really amazing. There's nothing else like it. Serena, Venus, you're talking about that we're kids. Tiger was kids. That's the way it works in every sport. Michael Phelps was at the Olympics at 15. There are no late bloomers at the Olympics. Like everybody knows when you're 13, 14, 15 Olympic sports, you know, you're going to be the next star, men or women. So it's who would have guessed Patrick Mahomes and Tom Brady? One couldn't start in college. One didn't, lost. In fact, I've said the last time that I can really think of it where there was a legendary high school quarterback, legendary college, came to the NFL, was Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning was unbelievable in high school. He was unbelievable in college. He was very good. That one was like, you could see Peyton Manning was a 78-mile-an-hour curveball. You could see it coming for miles. It was a bad boxer. You could see the right hook for miles. Peyton Manning was, he's going to be good. 5 years later, he is good. 6 years later, he's in the NFL. That's it, though. It doesn't work that way. Everybody's transferring, going to junior college. Big Ben's going to Miami of Ohio. It's crazy.
Maybe it has something to do with the fact that there's so many more moving parts in football than there are in other sports.
You depend on more people.
Like in an individual sport like Michael Phelps or Serena or, a track star, like it's just you. Like you're just going to be better or you're not. You can't rely on anybody else. It's just you running the race. It's just you swimming. Like there's a lot of moving parts in football. Maybe that has something to do with
you. You really rely on other people for your success.
Yeah.
And here's another thing. Football practice is hard. It weeds a lot of people out. Like I've talked to general managers for years. They're like, the reason the NFL draft, half the NFL is undrafted, which is insane. It's insane. They're like, you can measure biceps, 40s, shuttle, bench. What you can't measure is for the first time in a football player's life. You get this in boxing a little too. Somebody punches back. Like in the NBA, Giannis, he's dunked over everybody since he was 15. Like there's nobody. But in football, he hits you as hard as you hit him. And that's within you. Some guys just don't have the stomach to get hit. They bulldoze their way over high school players. They bulldoze their way over college players. And they get to the NFL and they get bulldozed occasionally and they don't like it. The bully gets bullied and they don't like it. And that's part of the NFL. It weeds out a lot of people beyond athleticism. All right, so let's just make a pick. Like many games in the playoffs, I had very little conviction. In fact, the most conviction I had, really, honestly, was Green Bay over Tampa, and that didn't work out. So I say this knowing I can see several outcomes. But I get a lot of more with Kansas City -3. They're more dynamic with extra time. Andy Reid is 26-5 following a bye, best in NFL history. They're more dynamic, period. 34 points a game and Patrick Mahomes, 7 career playoff starts. They have more experience. 33 different players on their roster have played in a Super Bowl, Tampa 6. They're more capable of playing in bad environments. They were the only NFL team to go undefeated on the road this year. I have more proof Kansas City's better than Tampa because I saw them chew them up and spit them out in week 12. I have proof, more of it, that Mahomes will handle the pressure. In two playoff games, when throwing the ball with pressure, Mahomes has a passer rating of 102. In three playoff games, when Brady faces pressure, he has a quarterback rating, a passer rating of 31. I have more proof that Tom will struggle early in this game. In the first half of his last three Super Bowls, 0 touchdowns, 3 picks, and a 74.2 quarterback rating. I've just got more signs that Kansas City's better. And more signs that Brady will struggle early and against pressure. I think a lot of this game is played within the 20s. I think Super Bowls, though Tampa has a deeper roster, are generally decided by stars. I will take Kansas City to win 31-24. I do not say this with great conviction. The weather's crappy. It hurts the more vertical offense. That would be Kansas City. Tampa's at home. The Chiefs have a major left tackle injury. They're using a backup against a dominating pass rush, JPP, Shaq Barrett. Vita Vea is healthy, meaning the Chiefs won't run a ton. But like last year, I thought San Francisco was better than Kansas City. I thought they had a better defensive line and offensive line than Kansas City. And then the Chiefs scored 21 points in 5 minutes and 5 seconds and blew my bet out of the water. I find it very difficult to bet against special. There's so many reasons I would take Tampa in this game. Brady's experience, they're playing at home, their defensive line is better, their linebackers are better. I think overall their defense is scarier. But I'll take Kansas City, 31-24. I've just got more proof, more dynamic, more wins off a bye, more capable of blowing out Tampa because I've seen it. Less chance of a quarterback struggling early. Mahomes over Brady. More pressure hurts Brady more than Mahomes. And there you have it. By the way, Brady's been sacked 5 times when under pressure. Mahomes only 1. Mahomes does have, I was listening to Aqib Talib talk about this the other day. Every quarterback has a kind of a style the way they play. And Peyton Manning was known for having busy feet. He was always moving his feet. It looked nervous. Everybody's got something. Omaha, and nervous feet. When you look at Mahomes, his signature style is the back pedal. He just keeps back. He has such confidence in his arm. He just keeps backpedaling and backpedaling. He's like 12 steps deep, and it doesn't really matter. He can make those throws. So even though Tampa will get pressure, Mahomes is sort of a master of backing up, and still burning you. But we'll see. If we got 16-18 mile-an-hour winds, Tyreek Hill over the top's not going to happen. So, you know, it's the way a Super Bowl should be. I'm happy either way. I know y'all think you're a Brady fan, but I do think, and I've said this for years, there is a little bit of a LeBron fatigue in the NBA. He's dominated for so long. There's a Brady fatigue. I think if Kansas City wins, my numbers are higher Monday on this show than if Brady wins. I think people come in, oh, Colin, what are you going to say about your guy Brady? And I think Brady and LeBron are respected, but I do think there's a little bit of a fatigue going on. And I think for the NFL, I think Kansas City winning is better. I think we have a dynasty. Leagues get a little concerned, but the NFL ratings for 20 years with New England went up. And they were up with the Steelers. And they were up with the Niners. When they're not up is when quarterback plays average and anybody can win.
Dynasties are better. Fans think that they hate them, but they actually watch more.
Of course.
In a way, it gives you someone to root against.
As long as the dynasty is interesting. When the Yankees in the 90s had all those stars and A-Rod and Jeter, or 2000s, like that... That's fascinating.
But even the Patriots, they weren't, you know, they were very quiet. They weren't dramatic, but everyone hated them.
Right.
So it gave you someone to root against. This is Cowboys. You either love or you hate the Cowboys.
Yeah,
right?
The Jimmy Johnson Cowboys were good for the league.
Yes.
The Niners were good for the league.
If you can be polarizing.
Yeah. So I think Monday, if they win, I do think, I said this earlier, I do feel like it's a little bit the risky business moment for Tom Cruise. Everybody knew who Tom Cruise was. He'd done several nice movies. Then he did Risky Business in his underwear, and he became iconic. And you can win one Super Bowl, but when you win a second and Mahomes beats Brady head-to-head, he'll become iconic. And we were talking this morning, like, where will he be all time with quarterbacks? I don't know. But there's like 4 or 5 people I put ahead of him, Montana, you know, Brady, Peyton Manning, Elway. And then the list gets, you know, Mahomes, to me, what do you do with Favre, Rodgers, and Mahomes? Then you have argument. I still think Elway, Brady, Montana, Peyton, I'm going to give those guys, that's kind of a different class. But if Mahomes wins a second, there are arguments to be made about Favre and Rodgers and you know, Fouts. And that's when you're going to get in Steve Young. You're going to get into the argument class and longevity against brilliance. You know, Sandy Koufax is considered the greatest pitcher of all time. He had 3 unhittable years and 6 good years. He was really good for 6. He was unhittable for 3, and we consider him the best. Like, it's not, I said this before, it's not a longevity argument when you look like Mahomes. Like, with Brady, he can keep winning, but because we think the best quarterback should have a rocket arm and move around like Elway, John's the best. It's amazing how often we give aesthetically, optically pleasing quarterbacks the benefit of the doubt. Favre won 1 Super Bowl, Aaron won. They're the best. Brady wins 6. He's a system guy. Mahomes is not going to have to win 6. If he wins 3, we'll immediately put him up there with Joe and Tom because he plays like the best quarterback should play. He's very Elway. He's got the best arm. He runs around. He ad-libs. He doesn't look. He throws left-handed. That matters in the argument. I said this. Bill Russell had 11 titles. Nobody ever called him the GOAT. His game didn't look like the GOAT. And then Michael Jordan, and Michael Jordan was the best-looking player, and he was the most stylish, and he was the most glamorous, he was the best, and he was the best dressed, and you're like, yeah, that's a GOAT. He's got half as many as Russell, but that's what the GOAT is. And that's why it matters, like with LeBron. We watch him. His game can be dominating. He can shoot. He's got a coolness to him, the passing. You know, you start looking at the greatest basketball players, there isn't an aesthetic that matters. Like Bill Russell, Kareem, by the way, I could argue is the best player. He's got the most points, the MVPs. But Kareem's game was the skyhook, and it just wasn't.
What's the saying? I'm about to butcher it. It's not like what you accomplish, it's what you make people feel.
Yeah.
I know I slaughtered that. But
no,
like,
but you're right. It's not how you make me think, it's how you make me feel. The great politicians, it's not about being smart. How do they make you feel?
Yeah, if you make someone emote, they're going to remember that. Like the things you remember in life the most is when you were like the most emotionally vulnerable, whether it was like anger or
happiness.
Sorrow or happiness. And like spectacular, glamorous players make you feel like you remember seeing Michael Jordan do this amazing thing and his sixth championship. You remember LeBron's like big moments.
Right.
You know, and if it's like longevity, but it's not really like spectacular.
Mahomes is spectacular.
Yes.
So he doesn't need six rings to be considered the GOAT.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
One of the more accomplished human beings in the NFL. He's a two-time Super Bowl champ, 12 years, multiple Pro Bowls. He's now a filmmaker and has given Tom Brady more than his share of trouble. He is joining us live to add to his resume. I am told Malcolm is wearing a sports jacket that he made. Come on, tell me, could you give some of us a break in life? What you're literally... You're a designer?
Yeah, you know, DeMar Seville is my company. I've had it for a while now. It's, you know, I enjoy looking nice, and I figured why not design my own clothes?
Yeah, I want to look nice, too. I can't design my own stuff. You faced Brady in a Super Bowl and beat him. And he had, you know, that was a pretty good day for Tom. He lost the game but had good. I think it was only one punt in that Super Bowl. And you faced him three times this year. So if you had to tell a young safety who had never Malcolm faced Tom, what would you tell him? What would be the little two or three secrets you'd tell him to have any success against him?
Well, I think you got to know at all times he's reading the safeties. You know, he is very much a advantage quarterback. So if you give him a look, he's going to do what's most advantageous for his defense. So if you're in split safety, you can be ready to get a run. If you're in a down safety, you know he's going to probably pass it. If you've got open gaps in the run and he sees it, you know, he'll do that. And what he'll do is he'll wait, you know, in his hard count, he'll wait in the shot clock to see if you can tip that or not, because he always wants to know where you are. They're going to start with a running back and put him out at a receiver and motion him back in just to see if you're a man-to-man. So if you can play with those kind of rules, if you know what he's looking at, you can slow his read down just a little bit post-snap. If you can confuse them with the pre-snap look. But that's going to take a coordination, not only from the safety, but from your linebackers, from your D-line. Everybody's got to be on the same page. Otherwise, he'll see what's out of place and know what you're in.
You know, it's interesting. John Elway, Mahomes, and Brady, this is really a weird thing to say, but I always feel like if Aaron Rodgers struggles earlier, throws a pick, his body language changes. He's not quite as aggressive. Elway, Mahomes, and Brady, I don't know. They could have four picks. It's just the way they don't care. So now that's just me as an observer of football. But I'm watching Tommy throw three picks in the second half against Green Bay. He couldn't give a rip. You've had some success against him. Is there I don't know if it's relentlessness. I mean, when you watch Tommy, do you ever feel like in a game you've got his number? Or is it a chess match for 3.5 hours?
Well, I think it's a chess match for 3.5 hours. I think we've seen games where he's gotten behind or teams have gotten after him. Even us with the Saints, we got after him and blew him out one time this year. And in that game, you didn't see him, you know, press. And never did we feel like, okay, we got control of this. You know that he has that gear, and because he's so persistent, that at any point in time, if you let your guard down or let him figure you out, he will come back and make those plays. So it's one of those things you've got to be, you know, always one step, two step, three steps ahead for the entire game, because he is, you know, him being frustrated at an interception is not going to stop him from executing his offense if you allow it.
Now, you face Mahomes as well. You had some success against Mahomes. Did you feel like when you face Patrick, okay, he's really talented, but I can fool him a little more. I can manipulate him a little more because of my age and experience advantage.
No, you know what? With Patrick, it's the opposite. You never know what he's going to do. So with Tom, you know he's going to be 3 yards behind the line, behind the center, and you know where he's going to be. Patrick Mahomes, they're running shovel passes. Their play design is crazy. They got motions all over the place. They got speed all over the place. And even when you get to him, he's elusive enough to either scramble for a first down or make some guys miss. And once you get off schedule, those plays are very, very hard to defend. And that's – so you're really thinking about being more disciplined when you play a quarterback like Pat Mahomes. Everybody's got to win their matchups. Everybody's got to stay home. You've got to know some of the tips and keys. And then he's just going to – you have to be ready for him to make plays. He's throwing – you know, the angles at which he throws the ball are crazy. You don't see him anywhere else. And he's just going to make plays, and you have to survive those. So it's definitely a different approach for both quarterbacks.
So 39 players on both teams have played in a Super Bowl. That means more than half have not. So I want you to go back to your Super Bowl. Even for a veteran, a cagey guy like you, when you come out of that tunnel, Bill Romanowski once told me, he was in a bunch of them, he said, that first quarter I was in the Super Bowl, I don't remember it. He goes, just flash bulbs. I lost myself. And all I know, I was in the third series. He goes, I don't even know what happened. So you tell me, you know, we got Tampa's got a lot of guys who have never been in a Super Bowl, Malcolm. Were you a little on edge first quarter?
So the last time I was in a Super Bowl was my second time around. So I was a little bit, you know, I understood what was going into it. And that's what it comes down to. Can you block out the moment, right? The all of the lights and the pressure that surrounds this game and focus on the game. It's the same game that you've been playing. So when I was in my last Super Bowl, those first three series, while they're going to be, you know, you're anxious, you're excited, it's going to go fast, but I was able to kind of slow the game down. My first time, those first few drives, I don't know what happened. Like, you just get out there, stuff's moving, you come back, you drink some water, and then you're looking at the pages. You don't even remember the plays, you know, and so it's like, who can – so I think the Tampa defense especially, like, they're going to have to settle down very, very early in this game and just do and focus on the things that got them to this place, taking the ball away, being disruptive on the quarterback, tackling with physicality. Those are the same things that win a Super Bowl, are the same things that have put you in that Super Bowl. And it's just the teams who can focus on those the most, the earliest, that seem to get settled in.
By the way, you faced Bruce Arians many times. You faced Andy Reid multiple times. My gut feeling is Andy Reid's got a lot more motion. That's what I would think. Is that the difference between the two?
Oh, 100%. I mean, you know, Bruce Arians wants to throw it down the field. You'll get those slot formations, max protection looks, take a shot. And then the rest is kind of Tom Brady just playing at the line of scrimmage based off of what the look the defense gives. When you get to the Andy Reid and the Chiefs offense and Bieniemy, you've got motions, you've got shifts, you've got shovel passes, you've got, you know, all kind of things, runs where you got gap scheme runs, zone runs, speed everywhere, orbit motion. You know, there's so many things that you've got to deal with that offense that it definitely creates some problems with your eyes. And as soon as your eyes aren't in the right place, you got somebody behind your defense.
Who do you like to win?
You know, it's really hard to bet against Tom Brady in these things, but when I've played both of these teams, what the Kansas City Chiefs present as a unit, from the play calling all the way down to the personnel on the field, it's just really hard to defend and really hard to win. And if their defense plays well, which I expect them to, I see the Kansas City Chiefs winning this one.
By the way, you are a filmmaker of some acclaim now, Oscar-nominated contention.
Trying to get Oscar nominated.
Okay, yeah. It says here you recently won a film festival. It's on Peacock. It's called Black Boys. It's Black History Month. What's it about?
So it's really just diving into the humanity of Black boys. Oftentimes we only see kind of the two polar opposites, whether it's the athletes and entertainers or it's the negative stereotypes that we see in the media and news and things like that. And rarely do we ever just dive into the spectrum of humanity of Black boys. And oftentimes it's ignored and it's reflected as early as our school age. You know, kids go to school, they read literature that doesn't talk about Black heroes. It has white heroes in it. They have less than 2% of educators are Black men. So you can go your entire time in school without seeing a Black man in front of the room. And then what does that just already tell you about yourself when it comes to leadership and things like that? So it's really just diving into that spectrum of humanity of Black boys, putting it on display and understanding how, as we as a society, have to do a better job of not trying to, you know, uplift Black boys, but really just believing that Black boys are worthy and able to just be themselves.
Malcolm, I said this multiple times when there was a lot of players going out publicly with the NFL. I love the manner in which you did it. You weren't trying to win arguments. You were trying to enlighten the league. And I thought you had a professionalism the way you did it that ingratiated yourself to fans, to people of color, to people that you had to often have strong disagreements with. And I just thought you held yourself to a standard that is so redeemable, and you're really a credit to the league, and I love having you on the show. I know you got a lot of options, and you chose us today, and I appreciate that.
I appreciate you. Thank you.
All right. Malcolm Jenkins, a great player, a filmmaker, and he made his own suit.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Carson Palmer's the former Pro Bowler, 15 years, 3 Pro Bowls, 3 playoff appearances in 15 years, and he's moved to an undisclosed location. I know where it's at, and I'm not telling anybody, but he's a lucky guy. He's already skied and worked out and had a good day today. So, you know, we talk about this all the time, Carson, that your career is different if you get Belichick and Tommy gets Cincinnati. We know that. That's true. We know that you – I mean, Matt Stafford has a career from Detroit. It'll look a lot better in Los Angeles. I want to start with something, the Deshaun Watson situation. You were vocal and said enough is enough. Where do you land with Deshaun Watson? Because Tommy, it took him 20 years to be a free agent before he could choose. I mean, that Mahomes, he's got it perfect. He wouldn't want to leave. Where do you stand on Deshaun Watson, who now is saying, there's too much dysfunction, I want out of here?
Yeah, I can't speak to his exact reasonings. I haven't had a conversation with him. But to me, it sure looks like he's going, man, I've been here for a handful of years. I've given it everything I've gotten. I've played great football. I only have, you know, another 4 or 5 years in my prime of my best football. And my best football with the Texans organization doesn't equate to Super Bowl wins. And he is chasing a Super Bowl win, just like every other quarterback in the league. So I'm sure it sure looks to me like he's just tired of the dysfunction, tired of making the head coach, who is also the offensive play caller, the GM also. I'm sure he wants some sort of foundational organization that knows what they're doing and has been doing and having success for a long time. And, you know, at the same time, the grass isn't always greener. And in order for him to get out of Houston and go somewhere else, they're going to have to give up a lot of draft capital and maybe too much draft capital to overcome and win that first Super Bowl that he's seeking.
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, that was the Carmelo Anthony trade with the Denver Nuggets, is that Denver the Knicks had to give up so much to get Carmelo. By the time Carmelo got there, he was the only player on the team. So to your point, you worry about that. So I want to talk about Brady. So Brady in New England at the end, Carson, he had nothing. He didn't have a functional tight end. Gronk had retired. They don't have a number one or a number two receiver. Then he goes to Tampa, where Scotty Miller's is 5. And it's weird. It was almost like it was a buffet. The first couple of months, it's like, okay, who do I have relationships here with? When you were watching him this year, you know, the turbulence, do you think some of it was, this team had so many weapons, how do you divvy it up?
Well, he absolutely knew what he was doing. I mean, Brady is obviously no dummy. He knew his contract was expiring in New England and just went out and found the most talented roster. He knew he was turning 43. He knew he doesn't quite have that same bounce in the pocket in his legs. He knew he didn't have that same velocity he had at 27. He was going to need guys that can take a 5-yard pass and go 80. And he found that. He found the best roster, no doubt about it. He was tired of, you know, his number one target being Edelman, who's a great player, but Edelman is a slot receiver. Edelman is very easy to double in the middle of the field. So he simply found the best roster, went and made that roster even better.
You know, Mahomes is obviously a special talent, but, you know, Andy Reid is such a clever play designer. And, I mean, we all know that Mahomes is talented, but he had a losing record in college. He got to the NFL, he's a better pro quarterback than a college quarterback. Tell me what playing with a more clever play designer is like. Go to your career, the most, you know, progressive play designer. Does it challenge you? Can it be hard initially? Is it more of an encyclopedic knowledge you have to have, especially Mahomes as a kid? Are you surprised he's adapted to it so well early?
You know, I think it's more about the play caller's delivery of how to run and execute each play. And in saying that, there's so many young coaches in the league right now, Matt LaFleur and McVay, and there's so many analytical ways of coaching and controlling games. You know, they all run similar plays, similar schematic design. Some of them are telling you, like Bruce Arians, hey, look deep first. Throw the 80-yard touchdown. It's really hard to go 80 yards on 14 plays in today's day and age against these defenses. So it's not so much the schematic design. It's the way that the quarterback and the offensive players are being taught to run that play. There's so many coaches, especially these young coaches, that just want to hang around and have a chance to win it at the end of the game. But these two coaches on Sunday, both these guys, Andy and Bruce, they're trying to win the game. They're going to go after that win. They're not going to play defensively and hold on till the end. They're going to attack, attack, attack. And some of those schematic designs of the plays they're calling, they're designed to throw the ball deep downfield over people's heads, not looking for easy completions underneath for 5 and 6 yard gains.
Carson Palmer joining us, 15 years, multiple Pro Bowls, already a College Football Hall of Famer. If you look at Pro Football Focus, which I do a lot for the grading of offensive linemen, I can figure out who can quarterback and receivers and tight ends, but their offensive line stuff, and it the grading's interesting. They took the top 15 players in this game, and the Chiefs had a lot of them in the top four. And then, Carson, it was like 6 through 15. It was all Tampa guys. So my deeper roster is Tampa. My stars are mostly Kansas City. In games you've played in your career, would you rather have 10 of the 15 best players or the 3 best players as teammates?
Depth. I mean, I want depth. I want a swing tackle that in case Eric Fisher goes down, we've got a guy we're paying $4 or $5 million that's a vet that can play both sides of the ball, left and right tackle. Stars are great and stars are fun and they're exciting. But when I look at this matchup, I'm looking more at what guys have defensively. And I like Tampa in this matchup because of the lateral speed that they have. And I like that because that's what Kansas City does. Kansas City tries to outflank you with Mecole Hardman coming in motion and Tyreek Hill coming in motion, and they're running screens and they're handing the ball off to them. Well, Tampa's got, as you said earlier, that their front seven is phenomenal, but they've got two of the fastest linebackers in Devin White and Lavonte David in the league. So they can run with that lateral speed. They can cover you sideline to sideline. 95% of the teams that Kansas City played this year did not have that kind of athleticism and speed. So I look at depth. I want deep. I want to be able to lose a guy and not feel like our season is hinging upon that because we have this guy that's been waiting in the wings and just waiting for his opportunity to play, and here it is. So I look at depth, and you're spot on. I mean, Tampa absolutely has depth.
Yeah. Carson Palmer joining us. You know, it's I always liked Belichick, and I always liked Brady. But what bothered me was, at the end of Tommy in New England, it really bothered me when I started seeing stuff leaked to ESPN, the magazine, where people in New England were saying, you know, we could win with a lot of guys. And I was like, okay, time out. Okay, come on. That bothered me. And then I watched Tom versus Time, and Giselle, his wife, says at one point, you know, he just liked to be walk into the building and feel appreciated. So I got to be honest with you, Carson. I'm rooting for Tom on this divorce. I don't like the leaks. I think sometimes corporations don't, you know, football corporations don't quite get the players, and that's all a team is, a collection of players. When this thing broke up, are you surprised by how it's ended? Were you rooting for one side or another?
It's always an ugly ending. There's no pretty, sweet, sensitive send-off. There is no doubt in my mind that Brady wants his 7th ring, but he wants to be able to go back to New England and be on the upper Northeast. And everybody realized, hey, it wasn't Belichick, it was Brady. I mean, that's what Brady's playing for. If Brady wins this Super Bowl, it's just a fact. It was Brady. And Belichick is great, and I'm not taking away from Belichick. I played against Belichick many times, and he had me confused and pissed off at stuff he was doing defensively. I'm not saying he's not a great head coach and a brilliant defensive coordinator, but there's no doubt if Brady wins the Super Bowl, I'm already edging that way right now. Just the fact that Tom's been to the Super Bowl literally every other year of his career. But if he wins this Super Bowl, I think it's, you know, the point is made that that was Brady. Brady was the Patriot way, not Belichick.
Do you ever have any bitterness is the wrong word because you're a happy guy, but just part of you? Because I always say I would be, if I thought I was talented as a broadcaster and I never felt I got great support. I've been very fortunate. I have. But if I didn't, it would keep me awake at night. Maybe my ego or something. In your career, you're the guy that every GM always says, oh, come on, if Carson Palmer showed up there and if you trade it, you're always the guy they use. And maybe now that you're gone at Stafford or whatever. But if you ever thought to yourself, just one night over a beer with friends, God, I would have liked Sean McVay for a few years or Andy Reid. Does that ever creep in?
It's impossible not to. Just like it's impossible for Brady not to really want this Super Bowl to prove his doubters wrong. But no doubt, I mean, I'm a firm believer. I've seen it firsthand that your career as a quarterback is completely dependent upon the organization you play for. And great players can overcome poorly run organizations. But in every sport, great organizations tend to always be around the playoff talk. They show up in Super Bowls. And poorly run organizations tend to not be in the playoffs very often. And so I do think that a quarterback's career and legacy is very tightly intertwined with the success and the way that an organization is run.
All right. When's the last time you grabbed a football and threw it?
I was in Lake Tahoe playing in the celebrity golf tournament in Lake Tahoe. And I was actually playing well. I was like in the top 10. I hadn't thrown a football in 2 years. And Larry Fitzgerald comes up to me. He's like, hey, man, I need to run routes. We got training camp starting next week. And I'm like, Fitz, I'm going to tear my tricep and my bicep in half if I go out and throw a football. But he kept wearing on me, and I went out and threw, you know, in golf shoes, literally my golf spikes, to him on a high school football field up in Lake Tahoe. And I actually spun it a lot better than I thought. And then I asked him after I got done. So I was like, is it coming off my hand much different than Kyler's hand? Like, where do I rest? He's like, no, you could be our third stringer, maybe our practice squad guy for sure. And that, as soon as he said that, confidence went down the roof, and I went and iced my arm. And I was in like 10th place in the tournament, and my arm was so sore for the final day of the tournament that I went out and shot like 88 because I could barely move.
See? Yeah, he just broke you up. You felt so good about yourself, and then he dropped that scout team thing, and boom, you were done.
Ego shot.
Boom, over. Great talking to you, Carson. Love having you on the show, man, and you just enjoy your winter.
Thanks, Colin. Be well, buddy.
All right, Carson Palmer. Good dude.